Hi, this is James Hinchcliffe. You need more front wing.
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast. I'm Steph Walcraft, and Paul Dalby is still away this week, so we're joined again by More Front Wing contributor Bash Beard. Hi, Bash. Good to have you back.
I'm glad to be here.
And we're also joined this week by the editor of PopOffValve.com, Tony Johns. Tony, thanks for joining us. Good to finally get you on for a full version of one of these things.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. So we're going to get started by going through a few of the news items in the IndyCar series for the past few days. And then once we're done going through those, we have an interview with Simona DiSilvestro. I had the opportunity to chat with her a couple of days ago about her qualifying incident at Milwaukee and the result of having to sit out the race at Iowa and what went through her head during that time and what it means for her in terms of her goals for Toronto and going forward. So we're going to have that a little bit later on. And then at the end of the podcast, the three of us are going to come back and preview the weekend in Toronto. So look forward to that. But let's get started by talking about some of the recent news items. I think the biggest thing that's come out in the past few days is the return of the IZOD IndyCar Series to Auto Club Speedway. I'm sure Bash is happy to hear about this one.
Well, yes, I do like having another race in my state. And, you know, that's not very far from where Tony lives either. But I'm wondering that if we bring all of our friends, him and me both, maybe that's going to be all the people there ever are there.
I was going to say, Bash and about six other people are going to be excited about this one. I mean, you want to be optimistic, right? And actually, I was speaking to Paul today, and he mentioned to me that if you talk about Fontana, you have to say that I don't think it's going to do any better than Milwaukee. I think it's going to be about the same result. A lot of people excited about going back, but when you get there, are the people actually going to show up? And I that's by far the prevailing concern here. There was an interesting quote that came out from the president of Auto Club Speedway that said that Randy Bernard had the choice to either take out a restraining order or return IndyCar to Fontana. So that demonstrates that they clearly wanted the event, and I mean, any racetrack would be looking for an event to replace the cup date that they lost. But the way that this is panning out, the way it's being set up, I'm just not optimistic. And I'm generally an optimistic person. But they're calling it, they're putting it in the fall in 2012, and they're making it a night race. And I just don't see how a night race on the West Coast that doesn't put anybody in the stands is going to start at a time that's reasonable to get people watching on the East Coast on TV. It's like they don't want people to pay attention. So it just none of it adds up at all to a successful event. And I mean, then there's ISC being involved in it as well. And we all know how good they are at promoting things. Apparently, the release from the track for this came out, and this bit of information came from our good friends at Trackside Online. But the release came out on July 4th at 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm. They sold it as being part of this fireworks extravaganza that they had at the track down there. So I'm like, okay, but nobody's, you know, everybody's had a few beers and they're watching fireworks.
Oh, you guys are being so pessimistic.
You know, it's going to be like a Dodgers game. People will show up about 40 laps into the race and they will leave about an hour later. Because it's Saturday night in the L.A. Basin? There's probably a million other things to do. That's the other thing I'm worried about. So,
well, I'll tell you this. I'll be a little glass half full, which if anybody who knows me knows that that's kind of surprising. But I'll hand the Auto Club Speedway this. Jillian Zucker knows what she's doing as a promoter and as a track president. She's no dummy. And so if anybody can make it work from the track's point of view, I think Jillian is definitely a candidate. And I think maybe the novelty of having a night race at Auto Club Speedway might draw some more people in, and having it in the autumn will be kind of a bigger draw. You know, I'm hesitant to write it off right now just because I mean, there is kind of the impulse to do that because of what happened with Milwaukee. But, you know, if we can, the tough part is just going to be getting people out to Fontana. I mean, I've been there a couple of times to cover races out there, and, you know, it's not exactly the most visible racing facility ever because of the, you know, the surrounding industrial park that they carved it out of. But, I mean, it's such a great facility. I've always been impressed by the facility there. It's a terrific place to watch racing, and it's a terrific place to race. So I think I'm going to be optimistic here. I think Randy Bernard and Jillian Zucker are going to get this thing. That they have enough lead time to really promote it well, and I think it can't really be any worse than the last race that was there. I think also that we can't discount the effect of having the new car and the new engines being there. Having that novelty factor for the race, along with it being a night race, might actually make it a little more popular than it was before.
But that all depends on people actually hearing about it in the first place, and that's the part that I think that people are the most concerned about. There's just no track record to have any optimism for that whatsoever, and I hate being a pessimistic person, I do, but I hope that we're all wrong, but I just can't help but feel like Randy is going to be sitting at the end of that event next year doing the same thing that he's doing about Milwaukee now, thinking, okay, well, here's the thing. If IndyCar actually takes it upon themselves to do some promotion themselves, there's a much greater potential for success than there would be if they just trust ISC to do the promotion for them, as they have in the past and as happened in Milwaukee with AB Promotions, and IndyCar actually takes some of it on themselves. That's a different matter. If we see that happening, then I'm more optimistic than I am just trusting it.
You know, I was just thinking about, you know, we have the LA office of IndyCar, mm-hmm. and IZOD likes to have big, you know, Hollywood parties when they're in that area. So maybe there is an entertainment tie they could do. I mean, they already do that to an extent with Long Beach, and that seems to be pretty popular. So maybe there's something they can drum up that would draw people out there.
You'd have to believe that they're going to be working from that office looking for as many celebrities as they can convince to show up, because that seemed to be where they were going with Long Beach this year, and I'm sure that that's something that they're looking toward going forward, is the star-studded red carpet lineup that, especially in that part of the country, gets people to show up to things.
I think you really hit on it there. This is, you got to remember what the environment was like 7 years ago in the Indy Racing League. You know, the promotion, like you said, the promotion in IndyCar back then was essentially, we are IndyCar, what can you do for us? That was basically their approach to everything in terms of promotion for events. I remember being involved in quite a few sales pitches to sponsors, and that attitude coming into it, and the, you know, corporate America basically laughed. They're like, are you kidding me? You guys have to help us sell our products, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a different era. I mean, we've got IZOD as the title sponsor, and they're always looking to make a big splash wherever they go. But having the Los Angeles market there, I mean, I cannot possibly conceive of them not wanting to make a huge deal out of it. And Randy Bernard, you know, you put Randy Bernard with over a year out from the race date, he's going to be driving attention and promoting and talking this thing up. So I really do think that that is going to make a difference from the IRL race that kind of ended on kind of a sad trombone note.
I think that, just to expand on that a little bit more, I think that you make an interesting point that the attitude through IndyCar has historically been, you know, we are IndyCar, we're a big deal, even when the numbers in the product didn't necessarily add up to that. I think I'm starting to see the culture change a little bit in terms of IndyCar being more able to work with tracks and with promoters to be a bit more willing to be flexible in terms of things like taking on some promotion and maybe tweaking the sanctioning fees somewhat, and not acting like IndyCar is a big deal when really there's a lot of work to be done. And that's an important culture shift that could make a big difference here as well.
Yeah, I really do think that they're making progress. Is there more work to do in that area? Yes, no question about it. You know, you can't achieve 100% culture change overnight. But I will say this, I do think that they're making inroads to changing that, that culture, that sense of entitlement that really marked the IRL from day one, even when there was no proof in the pudding. I really do think, though, that that having eyes on board, having the culture changing a little bit, having the 2012 new regulations in place, I think all of that is going to add up to a healthier, maybe not a sellout, and maybe even some empty grandstands, but not nearly as many as there were 7 years ago.
I think in terms of the series in general, absolutely we'll see a great deal of growth next year in terms of Fontana, this event itself. We'll have to just sit back and see what happens and hope that you're right.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Let's talk about the announcement today from Sam Schmidt Motorsports and AFS Racing, announcing that they will be in partnership to put the 17 car back on track from Mid-Ohio forward for the rest of the 2011 season. We got to believe that it's Catherine Legg that's going to be in that seat from all the rumors that have been swirling around, don't we?
I've seen Plowey's name.
Yeah.
Oh.
I've seen Martin Plowman's name, too.
Oh, of course, that's right. Yeah. He's been making noise about having a big announcement coming up as well. So that then undoes my theory that Tag's money for the rest of the season might have shown up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Either Catherine or Martin would be a terrific candidate for the seat, and I would be thrilled out of my brain to see either one of them take this on. So for me personally, I love the news and I can't wait to see it.
Well, sure. Any addition to the car count is a good one, especially when it's a good and popular driver that's being put in the seat. But it is concerning for Alex Tagliani because there are still rumors going around that his funding runs out after the Edmonton race and that Catherine Legg may be the person that's sitting on the sidelines waiting to step in. So we'll have to see how Tag does in the two Canadian races and whether he is able to get some funding secured to finish out his campaign, because it would be a crying shame to see him not be able to finish the season after the run that he's had.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it just, something's got to come up there, and then maybe that's a two-car team, you know, with the 77 and the 17.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a good thing to see, and I would really hate for him, you know, that could still happen with somebody else in his car, but I would really hate to see it. I would really hate to see that.
Yes.
I agree. I mean, Tags is such an asset to the paddock. I mean, when you talk to the guy, it's so evident his love for racing, but also his love for dealing with people. And that's why it's been so frustrating for me personally to see him having money troubles and getting, you know, trouble getting sponsorship for his ride. So I really hope that he's got something in the hopper, you know, for after the two Canadian races. But hopefully he'll drum up some support from some good performances.
Sure hope so. I assume that this also means then that we have seen the end of Rafa Matos for at least this year, which just leaves the statement there, another lights champion bites the dust.
Yeah, Rafa, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, there's promise and then there's wrecking, and if there's not enough money that comes with that, then, you know, sometimes you don't stick around.
Well, that's the story for a lot of people, isn't it?
You know, you've got promise and wrecking with Viso, but he never goes away. So there must be a ton of money there.
Well, have you met Hugo Chavez? I haven't, but I have bigger things.
he's got a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, the series needs to have its quotient of jockey-sized wreckers out there. So, you know, EJ fills that slot pretty well, and it does it with a smile. So. And what else can we say?
We can say, look out, Toronto. That's what we can say. Anyway, speaking of lights, here's another story that came out today. Daniel Harrington will be sitting in the number 77 car in the Indy Lights series for Toronto and Edmonton, since both Connor Daly and Brian Clausen are not available. Good news to see Daniel in a car. Absolutely. It's been a little while, so good to see.
I think the last time I heard from Daniel Harrington was the kerfuffle with Sebastian Saavedra last year, wasn't it?
Excellent use of the word kerfuffle.
Yes.
2 points for Tony.
Yes. And before that, I don't think he was, I think he did a partial season in 09, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that was, he was a spotter last season, so mm-hmm. he kind of got that call literally at the last minute, so it's kind of nice to see him get a little bit more warning for this one.
Yes. And certainly hope to see him perform well. Always good to see American, promising American talent in the feeder series, so let's hope to see good things there. Here's one more news item for you. And, Tony, I know you're going to jump all over this one. I don't even know if you've heard this news yet, because you didn't say anything to me earlier today when I mentioned it. The second weekend at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve is officially open for negotiation.
I will just say, oui.
Yes. IndyCar, please jump on this. Oh, my goodness. I think they should do this for free.
You know what? If I were Randy Bernard, and it's a good thing that I'm not, because otherwise the series would be bankrupt, but I would pay to have the series run at Gilles Villeneuve. I love that track. Absolutely love it.
If there's a way for IndyCar to get at that track, it needs to be there.
Oh, I totally agree.
The issue historically has been that Circuit Gilles Villeneuve has, it's controlled by noise ordinance laws that are operated by the City of Montreal that limit it to two race weekends per year. And of course, the first one is operated by the F1 race, and until, what is 7 days ago, roughly, the second one was occupied by the NASCAR Nationwide weekend, and obviously there was no way for us to share any sort of headline opportunity with that, so that meant that IndyCar was just off the table. But the story behind that is that the NASCAR Nationwide sanctioning fee was high enough, if I have my story right, that the promoters, Octane, were looking for the government of Quebec and the government of Canada to kick in a little bit of support to pay the fee, and I believe it was the government of Quebec that declined to do so.
Well, it was to the tune of $1 million, I believe, if I remember my story correctly. So I think the deficit was, if I remember correctly, the deficit for the promoters was $1.6 million, and they were asking for $1 million from Quebec and from Ottawa. So I think, you know.
In Canada, that's not an unusual thing to do, I'll be honest with you. Government, the city and the provincial government and the federal government all kick in for the Toronto race, if I have my story straight. I'm not sure that it's quite that much, but both of them certainly, both Quebec and the federal government certainly kick in more than that for the F1 race, quite a bit more. So it's an odd thing in the States, but in Canada it's not an unusual thing at all for governments to kick in to support tourism and bring big events in to the large cities. That part of the story really isn't the part that's surprising. The part that's surprising is that the province of Quebec decided that the amount that NASCAR was asking for was too much.
In my opinion, obviously I'm kind of talking it out of something other than my mouth here, but but I think possibly part of that has to do with the fact that NASCAR was bringing in a second tier series to race, and they were asking first tier money. Formula One, especially in Quebec, I would believe, is such a bigger deal than mm-hmm. NASCAR, period. And then NASCAR bringing in the equivalent of the GP2 series to race, notwithstanding the fact that Jacques Villeneuve was, an annual participant in the race, I think that kind of factored into the decision a little bit. Obviously not being a Quebecer and not being a fan of the Canadians, I would not know for sure, but that would be my guess.
Well, I think that the the reason why this may have been supported in the first place was because I think there was a belief that the Cup Series would eventually follow suit and end up north of the border in Montreal. But that obviously hasn't happened, and there's no sign of it happening, and there are a lot of reasons why it would be difficult to make it happen, because there are so many NASCAR faithful who have problem enough with the two road courses that they have on their, what is it, 36 race schedule, something ridiculous.
There was no way at all, ever, that NASCAR was going to take the Sprint Cup Series to a new road course. I don't think that will ever happen. And having worked NASCAR for the past decade, you know, basically their philosophy has been to use their touring series, their lower touring series, as a kind of a shoehorn to get into these places like Mexico City and Road America, and run the road courses and have a presence there without committing the Sprint Cup Series there. They know that if they commit the Sprint Cup Series to another road course beyond Sonoma and Watkins Glen, that there will be an outcry.
Mm-hmm.
So, if Montreal ever thought that they were going to be getting the Sprint Cup Series, then they were sorely mistaken. But I think getting back to the IndyCar Series, I think there's a huge opportunity here for the series to investigate this. You know, obviously the new turbocharged engines are going to be quieter than Formula One, so that's an asset.
Mm-hmm.
The sanctioning fee is going to be significantly lower, and possibly, you know, be co-promoted with the series, so that might be a financial savings. But beyond that, the track is such a good road course, and provides so much good overall racing, that it would just be a total slam dunk. And the fans at Circuit Gilvigneau, sorry, I can't pronounce it.
I'm not much better, to be honest.
But the crowds there are so tremendous. I have always been impressed by the crowds at the track. And it just, it's so much of a slam dunk that I just want to reach through my computer and grab people by the lapels and say, do this, make it happen.
Well, absolutely. I don't think very many people would disagree. The whole issue is still completely up for negotiation. As of July 1st, it became legal for other sanctioning bodies to approach the promoter to negotiate. That was the wording. So it's still entirely possible that Nationwide will come back to the bargaining table and will end up agreeing on something with the promoter and the government. So, or they may go in a completely different direction. But IndyCar, should they choose to do so, is now in a position where they can go in and undercut Nationwide to take over the weekend if they so choose, and they absolutely should be trying to do that if they have the ability to do so. It's my opinion.
Do it.
Yes. Or Tony will come and grab you by the lapels. Okay, so that's all the breaking news that we have to discuss. So just before we do a preview of the Toronto race this coming weekend, let's listen to my chat from earlier this week with Simona DiSilvestro. As I mentioned, she talked in detail about her qualifying crash in Milwaukee and the circumstances behind sitting out the race in Iowa, and what all that means to her for the rest of the season, going into the road and street courses, and how she views the oval courses as well going forward for the rest of the year. So let's give that a listen now. Steph Walcraft of More Front Wing here speaking with Simona DiSilvestro. Simona, thanks so much for giving us a bit of your time today. First things first, let's ask, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good right now. You know, I think it was a tough last 2 months for me. You know, mm-hmm. I think it was the biggest challenge I had to go through in my life. So it was pretty tough. But, you know, I'm really excited to get back in the car this weekend. And that's the biggest thing, you know, just feel all right. You know, I think still a little bit sore in my back from the crash in Milwaukee, but things are getting better.
That's good. I think we've talked enough, and the press has talked enough about the incident in Indianapolis. So let's talk a bit more in more detail about Milwaukee, as you mentioned. Talk us through what happened with that, and how you felt right after, and then what happened on race day.
Well, Milwaukee was definitely a little bit, you know, different. You know, I think I started really getting confidence back in the car and really pushing the car, you know, and I think I overstepped the limit a little bit there, and you know, I had a pretty big crash, especially the second hit, where it was pretty tough. And mm-hmm. you know, right after the crash, it was really hard because, you know, my back was really painful, and it was just a really painful. Stayed at the hospital quite a bit, and you know, during the night it went okay, and the next day I was okay too. You know, it wasn't that bad. But then as soon as I got back in the race car, you know, I felt really dizzy, and those are not really good things to have when you're driving a race car. No. So, you know, I had to park the car, and you know, I think it was the right choice, and just you know, it was just a tough weekend for us overall.
Definitely. Now, the turnaround between that race and Iowa was only 6 days. So, did you have a feeling during the week that you might end up having to sit out, or did you feel pretty good in between?
Well, you know, as a race car driver, you just try to get back in the car as quickly as possible. So you kind of try to fight through it. And, you know, I was pretty dizzy during the whole week, but it was getting better. Better and better, you know, every day. And then, you know, I had to say the truth to the medical staff that I still felt a little bit dizzy. And, you know, I didn't got the opportunity to race at Iowa. You know, it was really difficult because, you know, you always want to be in the race car and always get your confidence back. And didn't get to do that. But I think, you know, missing out that weekend was maybe a good thing. You know, it really made me think about things I have to change and things I can do better, and that's really important. I think that's really going to help me progress this season and in the future.
Okay, that's great to hear. Can you talk a little bit about what sorts of things you decided you need to improve on?
Well, you know, kind of just in general things. You know, yeah, there's things you can do better. You know, you can work harder at some things and things like that, and you just realize them when you're going through a tough phase like that. And you know, it also makes you realize how lucky you actually are. You know, I'm driving a race car. That's what I love doing. And I have an unbelievable sponsor with Nuclear Clean Energy behind me that is supporting me, and a great team too. So it just really makes you appreciate what you have, and just makes you want to work even harder to really achieve the goals you want to do.
And it seems like the sponsor and the team have been supportive even after having to miss the race at Iowa on such short notice. Would you say that that's accurate? And how has that support system in the background been working for you?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I have a great support system, like my family, you know, my manager, even the team, and my sponsor, Nuclear Clean Energy and Entergy. You know, they've really been supportive. You know, after what happened in Indy and Milwaukee, it has been really tough. And, you know, I'm really lucky to be with people like that, that really believe in me and really give me the tools to actually succeed in racing. And it's just really cool, you know, to have people like that behind you.
Definitely. So most of your racing career has been driven on road and street courses, and you don't really have a lot of history on ovals. And, of course, you had your rookie season last year and then the first segment of the schedule on ovals this year. After the difficult couple of months that you had in this oval segment, are you looking at oval tracks any differently than you were before? Do you feel any differently about them than you did before?
Well, you know, definitely it's a big learning curve for me because, you know, I'm still pretty new in them. I think I totally have only completed like 10 oval races. So, you know, I'm a pretty big rookie on the ovals. And it's just, you know, I think you really have to respect the ovals. And, you know, I do that. And, you know, I even did that before. And it just has been a little bit rough for me on them. But, you know, I think everybody kind of goes through these things. Maybe for me it happened a little bit more together, you know, all one after the other. And, you know, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe I got all the bad things out of the way right now and the only good things are going to happen. So that's kind of how I'm trying to think about it. And, you know, for sure when we're going to go back to the ovals, there's going to be, like, little doubts coming up in your mind and things like that. But, you know, it's just a thing in life, and you just have to kind of fight through it and really learn from it. And that's the biggest thing that I'm going to try to do in the last three ovals we're going to have this season.
It's great to hear you being so positive. There's been some speculation, and you even alluded to it a little bit in a couple of interviews that you did right after the incidents, that you might be having those doubts and questioning a little bit whether you've been wanting to get back in the car. How do you feel right now? Are you feeling okay with it? Are you feeling confident with continuing on?
Yeah, well, you know, I really had only those thoughts after Indy because, you know, that was a really big crash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's always hard when something fails on the car. And, sends you in the air, and you know, you almost, you know, kind of risk, really risk your life in those situations. So, you know, you think about those things, but you just, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a race car driver, and that's what I do. You know, I'm the most happy when I'm driving my race car, and you kind of realize that, and you know, then you just want to get back in. And when I went back in out there, you know, for sure, I was a little bit scared. There's a lot of, you know, things that can go wrong, but you just enjoy it and just rebuild your confidence. And those are things I'm trying to do right now. And you know, going back to the road course, I think that's going to help for me, because that's what I've been doing since I'm little. So, you know, it's going to be good being on the road courses and just really establish myself on them again.
Oh, that leads perfectly into my next question. Of course, you're driving your what was your backup chassis, Pork Chop, now after the incident with poor Janet at Indy. Of course, Janet was all streamlined and optimized for oval performance, and Pork Chop is not, and he's heavy and he's bulky and he's old, and the oval courses would really have displayed that in terms of the performance. Now that you're going to the road courses, can you explain a little bit? The assumption is that those sorts of differences won't really matter as much on the road courses. Can you explain a little bit why that would be?
Yeah, definitely. You know, on the oval, you know, you really depend on the car that you're driving, and you know, the lighter car you have, the faster you're gonna go, and you know, the slicker it is, the more prepared it is, the faster it's gonna go, because you, all the ovals we go to, usually, you know, we're flat out and you know, lifting, so it's just really, you know, every little thing you can do to make it faster is going to count. And on a road course, it's a little bit different. You know, I think the drivers really, really come into play, and you actually have to muscle the car around the racetrack. So I think these things don't, like are as much, like they're not as pronounced, but they're still there. And, but you know, I think, the team really worked hard to get Pork Chop a little bit lighter and a little bit better. And, you know, I'm pretty confident, you know, that, we're going to be pretty good. And I think even on the ovals, you know, I don't think it's going to be so bad, but for sure, I don't think it's like Janet was, but, you know, I think I can be happy with Porto.
Now, I'm going to do an awful thing, and I'm going to ask you a Danica question, but I'm going to frame it differently from most of the Danica questions that you get. What I want to ask you is, are you feeling any pressure as a woman in the IndyCar series with the knowledge that people seem to be assuming that Danica is moving on to NASCAR at the end of the season? Has there been any feeling in, for you of taking on sort of the leadership role as a woman going forward in IndyCar?
No, I don't really look at it that way. You know, I've always considered myself as a race car driver. So, you know, I'm not really looking if I'm going to be the leading, like, female race car driver in the as an IndyCar series. I hope not. You know, I think Danica is a great driver, and, you know, it's fun racing against her, every weekend. So, you know, I hope she doesn't leave. And, I don't look at it that way. You know, I'm just trying to be the best race car driver out there. And, that's the thing. You know, I'm not really looking at all the other things.
Okay, that's great. One more question for you. Of course, now we're going into Toronto, so can you talk a little bit about what your goals are now for the rest of the season, even with the knowledge that you've missed a race? So what does that do for your goals for Toronto and going forward for the rest of the year?
Yeah, right now, you know, for me, I think that it's a little bit funny. It almost feels like a new start of the season, you know, and I was talking to the team about it like that too, because it's after everything we had, you know, just like it's kind of a chapter that has closed for me, and just looking forward to it. And like Toronto, you know, I think last year we didn't have the fastest car, but we had my first top 10 finish last year. So that was a good thing. And I think we improved a lot with the car this year, and those are things that we're going to come into Toronto with. And I don't know, you know, I think I'm a better driver than last year. I've learned a lot, and just, you know, really going to try to maximize that. And I think, you know, if I really do my job right, the team too, and things kind of go our way, you know, I seriously think we can have a really good result in the next couple of races.
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks so much for your time, Simona. I always appreciate speaking with you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. And thanks very much to Simona DiSilvestro for joining me earlier this week. And it's always great to hear from her. It's really great to hear her sounding so positive as well after everything that she's been through for the past couple of months. It's really a sign of her deserving of the nickname Iron Maiden that she's acquired recently, that she's able to put that all behind her and look forward with such a positive light. So best of luck to her this weekend.
Absolutely. I think she needs another kind of St. Pete type race, you know, up front battling with the big names just to say, hey, I'm that stuff's behind me. Watch me go.
Absolutely.
That would be great to see.
Let's hope that Porkchop is up for it.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I hear Porkchop's on a diet, especially for this weekend.
Absolutely.
So.
Speaking of this weekend, let's talk about what we expect to see in Toronto. I'll toss out the fact that I can't emphasize enough for you guys. First of all, wait, before I get to what I want to emphasize, let me just say promotion in the city has been much better this year.
Awesome.
You can't walk anywhere downtown without seeing banners on the light posts advertising the event. I've seen a few banners outside of bars with beer associations, which I haven't seen in quite a long time. I hear that there have been ads in the commuter papers. Word is getting out about Free Friday, so I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how the turnout is for that. And the only thing that has been lacking this year, from what I can tell, is the actual hands-on getting out into the city events. They didn't do the festival in Dundas Square that they've done for the past couple of years. Trying to track down any kind of schedule of autograph sessions or anything like that has been like pulling teeth. So that has been a bit disappointing. It's been starting to trickle out that there have been a couple of things, but I've been looking for it, and I have found out about these things so late that I haven't been able to make arrangements to get to them. So you can imagine that somebody who's who would just potentially just stumble upon the information and happen to show up, they're not going to do that because the information's just not out there. So that part is disappointing. But I still think that we should be optimistic that we'll see better crowds this year than we have for the past couple of years, and I'm looking forward to that. So the part that I wanted to emphasize, I cannot tell you enough how much pressure James Hinchcliffe is going to be under this weekend.
Wow.
It's huge.
Right.
It's huge. They're, like, I was talking today to a gentleman named Derek who runs a motorsports memorabilia shop in town called Toronto Motorsports, oddly enough. And he is he's partnering with Newman Haas to sell Hinchtown merchandise at the track this weekend. And he says he doesn't even know if he's got enough merchandise from the interest that he's had to last through Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah. He's expecting it to go fast.
Good for him.
Yeah. And that's great. I mean, Canada seems to be clamoring for more motorsports stars, and hey, this is the guy. I mean, from him having the personality and the drive to take on this, you know, I just hope he has a great race weekend to kind of top it off.
I do too. And the thing that I'm concerned about is whether it will be so much pressure that he makes a misstep and doesn't finish the event. And I'm really hoping that he's able to pull himself together and keep his head clear, and just finishing the race would be, under the circumstances that he's going to be under here. I mean, Canadians put a lot of pressure on their drivers. It's not the same as going to a race in the U.S. And it sounds like I'm sort of making things up here, but we really put a lot of pressure on our drivers. Paul Tracy can almost hear us. Not almost, he can hear us cheering from the car, from the stands. We're that loud and we're that emphatic and we're that desperate for a young driver to cheer for with Paul and Tag being in the latter part of their careers that he's going to be a serious commodity this weekend, James. So I really hope that he's able to, when he gets into the car, that he's able to push all that aside and put up a good result.
Well, I mean, we all have to remember where we are this weekend. This is Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing I know about Toronto, the sports fans in that city can bring an unbelievable amount of pressure upon their professional athletes. I think it's well known among the people who are listening, who know who I am. They know that I'm a huge hockey fan out here in the non-traditional market of Phoenix. But I have plenty of Maple Leafs fans that who are friends of mine who give me a daily monologue on how each potential player, prospect, coach, general manager, anybody that has any connection to the hockey team, they examine it in microcosm. They pick apart every little detail about their performance. And when they're happy, they are so thrilled. And when they are angry, watch out. You know, Vancouver has nothing on Toronto. And translating that to racing personalities, if James Hinchcliffe has a standout weekend, it could be one of the biggest days of his career. That's thrilling for me, but it's also a daunting prospect, I would think. And I think that Paul Tracy might be feeling a little relieved that a little bit of that pressure that he's always been under as the thrill from West Hill is being diverted a little bit to Mr. Hinchtown.
Well said, Tony, and I would have put it the exact same way myself, so it's good to hear it come from somebody who's not from Toronto and have it verified that the perception is the reality.
Yeah. It amazes me already this week how much media and appearances we've seen Newman-Haas promoting that he's already done. Mm-hmm. You know, and we know his family's up there, right? And it's just like there's already got to be things pulling him in about 50 different directions. So, and the expectations will be huge. So it definitely is going to be something to watch.
Absolutely. And, of course, speaking of the Canadian drivers, I think they're all under quite a bit of pressure this weekend. There's James, and then there's Tag, who, as we mentioned, is driving for his ride right now. And there's PT. And PT, you put him in a car where he's not running a full season, and he's got nothing better to do than to try to go out and win, and then put him in a concrete canyon like Toronto. Yeah, no. You know, it's funny you should mention the double file restarts. This is on my list of things I wanted to talk about. I did a preview of the Toronto race for IndyCar Nation this week. You can go to IndyCar Nation right now and sign up, and you can find it there, by the way. And one of the things that I was going to set the whole article up with was what a big problem at Toronto the double file restarts were going to be. And I started going through the statistics for the past 24 runnings of the Toronto race, because I was going to say, look how many races at the start with the double file starts have had issues at turn one, and look how bad this is going to be. And I started going, okay, 2010. There was no issue on the start. Okay, 2009, no issue. 2000, and wait a second, I started going back. And I think in the last 10 years, I found only one. I don't know that I made it all the way to the 10 years, but I found only one race where there had actually been an incident in turn one of lap one. And I went, oh, well, I guess this is going to be as bad as I thought. There were plenty of issues on turn three. There are always issues at turn three, but turn one was actually surprisingly fine. So if everybody keeps their head down and is smart about it, maybe they'll actually get through.
Well, now you're going to have like a decade's worth of restarts in one race that'll be side by side. So who knows what we're going
to
see.
Right, but according to the statistics, yeah, if only one of them is a crash fest, then that stands up to the statistics that I found. So there you go.
I have to think that the IndyCar drivers are probably going to do what they did at Long Beach.
And just do whatever the heck they want?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Keep in mind that when they started doing that, that's when all the trouble happened.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that the late race single file and a half restarts that they had, they all thought, hey, we're being safer by doing this, and then they all piled into the first turn and wrecked each other, and you know, Alio started being the golden bowling ball. So, you know, I think we could probably chuck the statistics out of the window. I think I actually think that if they do the double file restarts as they're supposed to, you will have less incidents than if they go in there single file. That just seems to be the way of it this year, because when they're going single file, they seem to feel more brave. And when they feel more brave, they act more stupid.
That was put very eloquently. Thank you, Tony.
Yes.
But seriously, though, I do think that race control is going to be a little more stringent than they were at Long Beach. I think because Long Beach was so soon after the start of the season that Brian Barnhart and his merry band of men were a little more lenient. Yeah, a little more accepting of the drivers' unofficial boycott there, just because they still weren't sure themselves how it was going to shake out. But I think that now that the drivers have had about a half a season or more of double file restart experience, that they're going to be a little more strict. And I think that might be a good thing, because they might step a little more lightly as they go through these really tricky turns.
Well, the other thing to keep an eye out for as well is what the drivers are told in the drivers' meeting. And I'll certainly be keeping an eye out while I'm at the track this weekend to see if any news does come out about what they're told in the drivers' meeting, because that will have a huge impact on how the double file restarts will operate this weekend in particular. So I will pass on that news if I receive it. Anything else about double file restarts before we move on? No?
Bring them on.
I can't think of anything. Okay. Yeah, bring them on. They're fun.
Yeah, we all like them. Drivers may not, but sorry, guys.
Yeah, I feel so bad for these guys that they actually have to earn their salaries.
No, I think you're right, though. It's just the side-by-side. Everybody's on better behavior. And, you know, like Randy keeps saying, these are the best, most versatile drivers in the world. We're seeing more of that when they have to go side-by-side. They show us that they have control and discipline, as well as, you know, the ability to go fast and be crazy once they get strung out a little bit. So, mm-hmm. You know, a little bit of everything.
Right. Well, another topic that we should discuss is Will Power. Seems from all accounts, he's done a couple of tests now since his nasty crash at Iowa that rung his bell, as they say. He seems to be fine and fit to race, so we should expect him to be okay from that perspective. But he has a little bit of a deficit in the points to work his way back from. Not terribly a lot. I think he's 20 points down right now to Dario, and getting into his stronger part of the season again. But he's got to be feeling at least a little bit of pressure right now.
Yeah, definitely think so. And you got to hope that his team is going to back him up on road and street courses like they did last season, you know, and not make the oval pit mistakes in the road and street courses, because he's definitely doesn't have any points to give up. He's got to grab everyone he can get a hold of.
You know, that really, you know, you bring up the oval pit mistakes, and it's kind of strange to me that kind of it's limited to the ovals. You don't really see Penske Racing doing too many of those mistakes on the road and street courses. So you got to think that maybe the team just kind of feels like they have the yips at the ovals. But I think if Will Power is 100%, that he's going to be virtually impossible to beat this weekend. I hate to kind of say that, because we all want to see something unexpected happen, but I think it's really his race to lose. The only question in my mind is whether he is fully 100% recovered from getting his bell rung at Iowa. Speaking as somebody who has had a severe concussion before, those things are really hard to predict. You can go for an amount of time without feeling symptoms and then have them recur. So I truly hope that he is over that incident at Iowa, but that would probably be the only question mark in my mind about whether or not he's going to be the odds-on favorite to win.
I think that's a very fair assessment. Any other topics with regard to what to expect in Toronto?
Oh, well, Sebastian Bourdais is going to be back.
Ah, good one. Thoughts?
I'll tell you, Sebastian has, I'll have to say that he's disappointed me, even with the context of him driving in a Dale Coyne race car. And no offense to Dale Coyne. I mean, I like him. He's a great guy. But he does tend to field, let's put it gently, sleds.
Mm.
But having said that, I think Seabass has been, has not impressed even with that context. So, it would be nice to see him finish a race. I don't think he's done that this season, has he?
Well, he didn't start St. Pete. I'm trying to think. He finished Barber, didn't he?
I can't remember.
I don't remember. I do remember him being all over the place in São Paulo. So,
well, he's not exactly setting the world on fire, let's put it that way.
That's for
sure. Or perhaps he is. Sorry, that was a terrible joke.
Yeah, don't say the word fire around a Dale Coyne race.
Yeah.
Into flames, but I do have to say, and you know, this may sound harsh for Seabass, but it really hurts for me to see Alex Lloyd out of the car and Seabass in the car. I really think that Alex Lloyd has gone above and beyond what he was expected to do in that Boy Scouts of America race car, and I really wish that he was the one driving and not Seabass this weekend.
You know, he's so solid. That's somebody, I just can't understand what's going on with Alex Lloyd. I mean, he's been really waiting for his big turn for so long. It's sort of like the Wade Cunningham story in a way, you know. You get a few chances, and you're really good when you get at them. But I hope something comes together for both those guys. But I totally agree. I'd love to see Alex just have a ride. But it's also nice to have Sebastian around. You know, I hate to not know what he's doing, and you know, he definitely was the class of champ car for so long.
I wish I knew what the money situation was behind all of these stories, because I don't know where, I guess Dale is probably paying Sebastian out of pocket.
I would think it would be the other way around. I think Sebastian is actually funding the road racing, and that's kind of the reason why he's in the seat to start with. I really don't think that, again, this is my opinion. It may be 100% off of what the truth is, but to me, it seems like, Sebastian had the funds available and basically got himself in for the road races that way. But,
the more surprising thing is that the information doesn't seem to be out there. I mean, last year we all knew that Milka's ride was funding Alex's.
Yeah.
Whereas this year, it certainly is not nearly so clear. The information just doesn't seem to be out there, so maybe that's something to try to investigate.
Yeah, but it's symptomatic of a larger issue. I mean, there's so little money out there right now. For Tagliani to have won the pole position for the Indianapolis 500 and still be on the verge of possibly losing his ride due to lack of sponsorship, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was even question at some point when GoDaddy was bought out whether or not Danica Patrick would have sponsorship. And, I mean, that seems to be almost an inconceivable thing to consider, and based on how much they market her. But, you know, people were actually asking that. And I think that's symptomatic of really the strained financial situation that we have. And I really hope that changes. You know, Randy Bernard has been teasing the past couple of days about huge, huge announcements coming in the next 4 or 5 months. Well, I really hope that that's true. And I hope that results in some trickle-down benefits for some of these drivers who are sitting on the sidelines. There are so many of them that are deserving of IndyCar rides and who would succeed behind the wheel if they just got the opportunity to do it. So I kind of took us on a tangent there.
No, that's a very positive thought. And I was just thinking to myself, maybe we should leave off on that unless either of you has anything else to discuss about Toronto.
Well, I did have one question. Do you think that Marco Andretti has got that monkey off his back finally, or do you think that he might fall back into the doldrums this weekend?
I think that with it being a road street course, that it's a completely different animal, and I would expect to see Andretti Autosport. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not expecting to see them perform particularly solidly this weekend.
That's interesting that you would say that, considering that Mike Conway is a victor for Andretti Autosports in another street race this year.
At Long Beach. And last year, which two races did Andretti Autosport win? Long Beach and Iowa. And they did not perform well at any other race. And the same thing is coming through this year, and that's what I expect to see continue.
Hmm. I don't know. I may have to disagree with you there just because of how well Andretti Autosport did at Long Beach as a team. You know, Ryan Hunter-Reay had that race basically wrapped up until he had his mechanical issues. I do think that they're going to do better this weekend. And you can't count out Ryan Hunter-Reay on the road courses, I don't believe. The question of whether Conway is going to be able to replicate his success is there. I think that the financial issues and the shakeups at his team might have an effect. I think that they might actually be contenders this weekend.
I hope you're right. It would be great to see some different names up at the top. Bash, what do you think?
I certainly agree with the idea that it would be great to see some different names up front. I'm just sort of on the fence about Andretti, though. I guess, like we were talking about in the last podcast, I'm not 100% convinced yet. I'm still on the fence as to whether they are back that strongly. I just think there's something about Long Beach, you know, and again, something about Iowa. I would love to see them be stronger. When it comes to having different names up front, you know, those names, Newman Haas, those two, Oriel Servia and James, I would love to see them be up front.
I think we're more likely to see them up front.
I agree with that. I know they have a long, strong history at that course, you know, so it's that team has proven itself there. So I would love to see that. And, you know, nothing would be better than have Andretti be a bit stronger. We used to talk about the big three of them and Ganassi and Penske, and they've definitely fallen way back from being that contender. It's definitely just the big two now, and they're not even always the strongest of the mid-pack teams, which is surprising to fall back that far so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'd love them to prove me wrong, but I'm a little skeptical.
I think I would agree. I would like to see Ryan Hunter-Reay kind of get over his terrible, terrible season this year with a strong showing at Toronto. I think he will be the strongest of the Andretti cars at the track. But if you're asking me who my dark horse is going to be, I'm going to say Tony Kanaan. It has been amazing to me how strong KV has been in the past few races. And I think that Tony is on the cusp of breaking through here, and he's going to be my dark horse pick for the race. I think I'll still go with Will Power as my expected pick, but you got to watch out for that number 82 Geico car.
Hmm. Okay, well, if we're picking, I think I'd have to agree with you 100% on Will Power as the headline pick, but as my dark horse, I'd have to go with Oriel Servia. Newman Haas is just too strong at this track to count out. They know this track inside and out. They've got more wins at this track than any other team. And Oriel has just been, he's been so strong already this year, with being with them. Well, I mean, off and on for a few years, but for his first full season with them, it's been fantastic to see. And, I'm expecting big things from both cars. If James can keep his head clear, but particularly for Oriel, I think we'll see a strong result.
I'm with Steph on the expected pick with Will and Oriel as the dark horse. Those are the two guys I've been thinking about. So
yeah. Great.
So we're now on the record.
Yes, we are. I hate making picks because I don't like to be wrong, but
I've been
wrong so often in my life that I'm actually starting to enjoy it.
Uh-oh.
I think on my business cards. Wrong 58% of the time.
You know, it used to be a lot easier to be right about this sport, but, you know, and it's wonderful that it's so competitive now that we don't know for sure anymore. So if that's the way that, you know, we end up being wrong, I'll take it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. That's a great place to leave off, so let's do that. Just to remind everybody listening that I will be at the track of Toronto this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so keep an eye on morefrontwing.com for updates, and please also follow on Twitter both morefrontwing and 99forever. I'll be updating from both accounts, depending on more news topics will come from morefrontwing, and my personal opinions on the events around the track will be coming from 99forever. And please also, if you are going to the track at Toronto this weekend, keep an eye out for details on our tweet up. We're getting together at the Toronto Motorsports booth in Thunder Alley at 4:30 p.m. on Saturday. There is a URL floating around where you can RSVP, and we're expecting to see a couple of guests. I can't say any names right now, but it sounds like you're going to want to be there. Let's put it that way. So if you are going to be at the track and you're available at 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, please swing by and meet me. And I believe Mish Beer from Open Wheel World may be coming. Mike Cockrell from Edmonton, the Mike Cockrell, is going to be there. He's in town in Toronto this weekend, and quite a few others as well. So come by and meet the people that you know online from the IndyCar universe, and please come by and say hello. And apart from that, we'll call it a day. So thank you all at home for listening. Thanks, Bash and Tony, for joining me tonight. Appreciate it very much.
You bet.
Glad to be here.
And thanks to all of you at home for listening as well. And remember that morefrontwing.com is your source online for blogs, photos, podcasts, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar Series and beyond.